This is a training session for Faith Global Missions on the policy for protection of children and vulnerable people. This is intended to meet the requirement that we perform annual training on this policy for all FGM personnel. There are four reasons that we have such a policy in place and that we conduct the training. The first reason is that there is evil in the world. There are people in ministry that can do wicked things. As we think of the history of missions organizations, even over the last 40 or 50 years, there are at least two organizations that have had a high profile in the news because there was inappropriate sexual behavior that took place between an adult and a child, or abusive acts that have been committed that were not handled properly at the time, and the persons were allowed to continue to minister among children, and that brought about great shame to the cause of Christ and great shame to those ministries. And those ministries have spent tens of thousands of dollars, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars, in trying to correct the situation and defend against the situation and to provide restitution to those who were injured. A second reason that we have this policy is our biblical responsibility to protect the weak. In James chapter 1 and verse 27, it tells us that true religion is to take care of the widows and the orphans. And I believe that that represents the weaker people in our society and in our church. And also, Jesus warned in Matthew 18 and verse 6 that those who would harm the children, that it would be better for them to have a stone, a millstone, tied around their neck and to be cast into the sea. In other words, it would be better that that person just was killed than to face the judgment that God would have for them for harming an innocent child. So God takes this very seriously. And we have a responsibility as believers and as an organization to provide protection for these children. Which takes us to reason number three, and that is to protect the innocent. We are not only to protect the innocent children from harm, but we are also to protect the innocent who may be accused of doing something that they did not do. So if there are false accusations, we certainly would not want those circulated publicly to damage the reputation of the person accused when the accusation is untrue. A fourth reason for having this policy in place is that it protects our organization. Now hear me clearly, the purpose of the policy is not to protect the organization. The purpose of the policy is to protect children and vulnerable people, but it is also to protect the organization, because we want to have a reputation in the community, in the Christian community and in the world, of being an organization that represents Christ and that cares for people and that takes care of the weak. So there are four reasons. There are more, but those are four key reasons for having this policy in place. So let's talk just a bit as we walk through this. Let's go to the first part and talk about the people that are affected. This policy applies to all staff members of FGM. It applies to all volunteers, to the missionaries, missionary families. Everybody that works with or for FGM that has contact with children or vulnerable people is included. The exclusion would be consultants and contracted workers that are not involved with children and vulnerable people unless there's something specific in their agreement with FGM. And we have some board parameters that indicate that that require that FGM personnel must be new creatures in Christ. They must be saved. They must be regenerated. They also must have a deep love for Christ and be motivated by that love to be involved in the global spreading of the gospel. And all FGM personnel must wholeheartedly and without reservation agree to the statement of faith of FGM. They also must accept the Bible as their final authority, and that also governs not only their personal lives, but their professional lives and their ministerial lives, and it governs their conduct as they are representing FGM. FGM believes in creating a culture of responsibility, of grace, of trust, of dependence on the Holy Spirit, and of spiritual maturity. And we believe that the Bible provides guidelines for moral conduct and direction on how to have that kind of a culture. Now let's talk a little bit about administrative policies. FGM values everyone, boys and girls, men and women, all ages, all races. Doesn't matter whether they're healthy or they're infirm. We believe that children are gifts from the Lord and adults have a solemn, God-given responsibility to care for them properly. FGM believes that children and vulnerable people have a right to be protected from harm and abuse to the limits of our jurisdiction, so we have the responsibility to protect them to the degree that we can and to provide proper moral and ethical conduct toward everyone. We also, as I mentioned, seek to protect innocent parties from false accusations. And we believe that healthy relationships are a good thing between adults and children and that there are expressions of proper care and affection, but we also believe that we should be careful with those. Let's talk about a few of the definitions. We'll not hit every single one of them, but some of the key definitions. For example, the accused is someone who has been alleged to have committed an act of abuse or neglect. It does not mean that that person has actually done that, but it means that they are alleged to have done that. The victim can be a child or a vulnerable person who is actually or allegedly the target of abuse. It doesn't, or neglect, or inappropriate behavior. The person does not have to be proven to be a victim, but in this document, when it refers to the victim, it's the person who is alleged to have been abused, neglected, or the subject of inappropriate behavior. Child abuse, for the purpose of this document, is defined as the treatment of a child that is often in the context of a relationship of responsibility, trust, and power that endangers or impairs the health and welfare of a child. And a child can be abused even though they may give consent to the adult. So abuse can be perpetrated with or without the consent of the victim. And we recognize four categories of child abuse: sexual, physical, emotional, and neglect, and those are defined in the document in the appropriate sections. We also recognize that abuse can take place in child-to-child relationships. It does not necessarily have to be an adult who is the perpetrator, and Section 461 addresses that. Sexual child abuse is the involvement of a child in sexual activity with an adult or another child, which includes but is not limited to verbal, visual, verbal remarks, visual exposure, and physical contact. Physical child abuse is any act which results in a non-accidental physical injury. And there are many ways that can be done, and there are examples in the policy in paragraph 4.6.3. Notice the exceptions to a parent disciplining their own child within reason and the definitions of unreasonable corporal punishment. And then emotional child abuse is defined by a pattern of behavior over time that impairs or risks impairing a child's functioning or development. And it can include acts of commission or acts of omission as defined in paragraphs 4.6.4.1 and 0.2. Child neglect is the failure of an adult to provide for the development of a child in all spheres. Abuse, let's talk about the abuse or neglect of a vulnerable person now that we have the definitions down. Vulnerable people or vulnerable persons are adults who are functionally, mentally, or physically unable to care for themselves, or they have a court-appointed guardian, or they have a developmental disability, or they live in nursing homes, adult family homes, boarding homes, or any other facility, or they get services from home health, hospice, or home care agencies. You may say, well, I'm not involved in those kinds of ministries. Perhaps not, but your ministry may extend to someone in your church who at one time or another may be in a nursing home or a family home or a boarding home or be receiving services that you may be involved in. So this is important for us to understand this. And we have several areas of that can be violations in this particular section. You can have abuse of a vulnerable person, which is the non-accidental, willful, or inaction that abuses or harms a vulnerable person. You can have neglect of a vulnerable person, which is simply when you or someone in your ministry that has a duty to care for that person fails to act. And you could also have a violation through exploitation of a vulnerable person. A vulnerable person may be willing to give you almost anything, but when you improperly use that person and take advantage of that person's trust and use their income or resources or trust funds or bank accounts or property, then that's exploitation. And this can also, and another violation is abandonment of a vulnerable person, which is when you have a duty to care for the person and you act in a way that leaves them unable to get food, clothing, shelter, or health care. So let's talk a little bit about inappropriate behavior. This would perhaps not be abuse, but it is wrongful conduct that violates any code of behavior established by FGM or is contrary to morality or integrity as established in the Bible. That while it's serious in nature, it does not meet FGM's definition of abuse or neglect. And this is going to be important as we move down through here and we see the process for inappropriate behavior later. So let's talk about the responsibility for this policy. FGM's managing director is responsible for the overall responsibility of the policy. Now let's walk through the steps of the procedures. First of all, FGM takes steps in screening applicants, and we look at specific history of employment and volunteer work with children. We ask questions on the application. We ask questions in the interviews regarding past experience with children and vulnerable people. We conduct background checks on all FGM personnel, including criminal records checks and any other appropriate background checks relating to any conviction involving abuse of children or vulnerable people, youth or adults. FGM has a zero tolerance policy. FGM will not employ or accept as a volunteer anyone with a prior conviction for or a history of child sexual abuse or related offenses or sexual abuse of a vulnerable person during his or her adult life. Now, we recognize the principles of repentance, forgiveness, and progressive sanctification, but because of the consequences of a mistaken evaluation can be so serious, we have elected to err on the side of overprotection rather than underprotection of children and vulnerable people. So let's talk a little bit about training. FGM trains personnel when they are new with FGM as a part of their orientation training and as a condition of their engagement with FGM. But we also provide ongoing training annually on this child protection and vulnerable people protection policy. And it is a condition of continued employment with FGM. In other words, if a person wants to continue to be employed by Faith Global Missions, they must be trained on this policy at least once every year. We do not record that training until the persons going through the training have signed the statement that they have gone through the training, that they have read the policy, and that they commit to compliance with that policy. That is the last step in the training, so you may sit through this training and listen to everything and take notes, but until you have read the policy and you have signed our statement that indicates you have read it and that you'll comply with it, and you've sent that to us, there is not a record that you have completed the training. We will maintain records of those who have completed the training. Now, we have a code of conduct that we would like you to follow, that we insist that you follow. And here are some guidelines for working with children and vulnerable people, which are designed to reduce risk through minimizing isolation and maintaining modesty. Also, we want to use appropriate displays of affection, increase accountability, and balance power and control. So let's talk about minimizing isolation and compromised position. Basically, you need to be visible when you're working with children. Just be visible. Make sure someone else can see you at all times when you're with children. Avoid isolation. Whenever it's possible, you should avoid being with a single child by remaining in the presence of at least two non-related adults or at least two children. And so this is just to avoid compromising positions. You should also maintain modesty at all times. You should refrain from being alone, as I've already mentioned, but especially when the child is changing clothes or otherwise less than fully clothed. You need to respect the child's privacy unless it's absolutely necessary for monitoring the health or safety of the child. You need to maintain, adults need to maintain their own privacy, and they need to refrain from freely discussing with a child sensitive subjects. You should not sleep in the same bed with a child that is not your own. Maintain separate sleeping and changing areas for boys and girls. Most of these are common sense. But if you're not sure and you think, well, this might be okay, avoid it. Avoid any compromise unless you're absolutely certain. If there's any doubt, err on the side of safety. We believe there can be appropriate displays of affection, but you need to be careful about touch. Proper touches are a good way to show our love for one another, and sometimes appropriate touches in one culture are not appropriate touches in another. Touching or tickling children or vulnerable people under their clothing or giving wedgies or pink bellies, that kind of thing, is inappropriate. Shouldn't be touching the buttocks or general areas. That includes slapping a child on the rear in a playful manner. That should not be done with anyone who's not your own child. And the inner thighs, female chest, off limits, and you should just be careful about touching. And appropriate signs of affection can be verbal praise, side hugs, pats on the shoulder or the back or head, holding young children. But keep in mind that some children and some vulnerable people do not want any physical displays of affection. So do not force displays of affection on a child or upon anyone. Be sensitive to these differences. Use discretion. If a child or a vulnerable person or anyone else seems nervous about you displaying affection in a particular way, then you need to stop. We think there needs to be increased accountability when adults are working with children. It's better to overemphasize accountability than it is to underemphasize accountability. In section 6.3.4, we have three ways that we have increased accountability. One is to always tell. That is, notify parents in advance if an adult is going to be isolated from a child in any way, if it's going to be required. So always tell. Number two, always ask. Always ask the parents permission for each child prior to any activities, like a retreat or youth activity, taking a child somewhere, being with a child after school. Get parents permission. Number three, always protect. You can use technology to protect the children, or you can use technology to harm. We want you to be using technology to protect children and vulnerable people from abuse or exploitation. That may include the use of cameras and recording devices so that there is a record of exactly what takes place. Let's talk about balancing the power and control in section 6.3.5. When children are with children, the ages and sizes need to be balanced. And there are several ways that you can do that are outlined in the policy, but you don't want large, powerful children with small, weaker children, because that sets up a power distance that can very easily result in bullying or abuse of some sort, and it's more avoidable if you balance the power and control. As you think about that, let's talk about three principles under that. Number one is discipline, and all discipline should be corrective rather than punitive. Never ridicule, humiliate, shame, or threaten the child. But do use verbal interaction to encourage and support, and correct and provide instruction. Do not allow bullying other children and vulnerable people. One child should not be allowed to bully, ridicule, sexually touch, or restrain other children. And there are other examples there. And if these things, if a child is doing these things, you need to report that. So now let's get into the nuts and bolts of what we do if we suspect child abuse or abuse of a vulnerable person. So section 6.4 is the instructions for reporting violations of the policy. First of all, let's talk about reporting within Faith Global Missions. Any FGM personnel who have reason to believe or suspect for any reason, including but not limited to the report of the victim, the reporter's own observations, and or any information received from a third party that any child is currently or has historically been the victim of child abuse by another FGM personnel or anyone else associated with FGM, such as an FGM partner who was or is working with FGM at the time of the abuse, shall be obligated to report the child abuse in strict compliance with this policy. In other words, if you have any reason to believe or you suspect for any reason that abuse has occurred, you must report it in strict compliance with this policy. Note the strict compliance. It is not flexible. You would not be able to come to me and say, well, this case is a little different. Do I really have to do this or that? Yes, you have to follow every step exactly as it's laid out in this procedure. And that includes, and if someone comes to you and reports that they have been abused, you are to report it. That is sufficient for you to suspect that abuse may have taken place. You will be much better off reporting something unnecessarily than not reporting something and later finding out it should have been reported. You are not to conduct any investigation of the allegations. Okay? And your reporting is not dependent on how severe you think the abuse might be. If you have a reason to believe that abuse might have taken place, then you are to follow these procedures. And the first step is to immediately report it to your supervisor. In most cases, that would be to me. And if I'm not available, then you are to report it to the senior pastor of Faith Church, which is Pastor Steve Byers. Secondly, you got to maintain confidentiality. By the way, the report that you would use, you've been provided separately. Please use that form as it complies with all of the requirements in the next section. So once the report has been made, except as required by law or by this policy, you are to keep the matter confidential. And that is strictly confidential. You do not talk about it with the victim, you do not talk about it with the alleged perpetrator, you do not talk about it with coworkers, you do not talk about it with your spouse. You maintain confidentiality. So you may be, then FGM will make any reports required by law to appropriate officials in the jurisdiction and residence of the accused and the victim, and also in the country where the incident occurred if that's in a different place. Now, you may be involved in this process. We may ask you to find out what those laws are. I would encourage you to check with the laws where you are serving and find out what are the requirements for reporting any kind of abuse of children or vulnerable people. It may be that in your area there are no laws that cover that specifically, but it's good to know that ahead of time rather than try to figure that out once you're in the situation where you have to comply with the law. Now let's talk about the investigative protocol for a violation of the policy, section 6.5. The first process, the process is to first report the process of reporting an immediate action is that all reports alleging abuse must be verbally communicated immediately. In other words, if you get a report of abuse, you need to pick up the phone and call me as soon as possible the same day. Don't wait until the next day. It doesn't matter what time of day it is. It doesn't matter if you're in the middle of your day and I'm in the middle of my night. You are to call and report that immediately. If you get voicemail or an answering machine, just leave the basics that that you have a case of abuse that needs to be a case of possible abuse that you need to report, and give us the name of the victim. Give us the pertinent information. And I will be back in touch with you as soon as possible. The next thing that you do is you sit down and you send an email to me. You send a written report, the report that we talked about, and then you can include in the email anything in addition to that, and then I will handle it from there. If I'm the one that's being reported or your supervisor is the one that's being reported, then you go to the next person in the line of authority. And also, once again, to me, if I'm not that person that's being accused. But in no case should your written report arrive later than 36 hours after you've learned of the incident or of the alleged abuse. The form I sent you will comply with paragraph 6.5.1.1. Please do not panic. Do not overreact. Do not challenge, argue with, or refute or criticize the minor or state to them any conclusions. Don't make any judgments. Just find out, let them tell you their story, and ask questions. In every way, respect the minor's privacy who made the report, and after having a second adult present, be sure that any discussion concerning the child abuse takes place at a location which is strictly private. So as soon as you learn that this abuse is being reported or being alleged, you need to get another adult as a witness to the conversation, and you need to go to a private place where there's no chance that someone else will overhear you. All reports of abuse must be handled in a quiet and confidential manner, and no disclosure should be made to anyone other than those provided in the policy. Please be sensitive to the emotional needs of the minor. Try to relieve their stress and anxiety. Love on them, show them grace. Be very careful how you love on them, but say kind things and encourage them. Let them know you love them and that you are going to get to the bottom of what they're reporting. When the managing director of FGM receives a report about the abuse, the first question to answer is whether or not there's a reason to believe that abuse has occurred. So if I, as the managing director, decides there is reason to believe abuse has occurred, then I'm going to follow the steps in 6.5.1.3. And I will these are decisions that you'll not have to make because I'll make those for you. Deciding what needs to be done to protect the victim, deciding how to confront the perpetrator, deciding what would be done with the perpetrator regarding his or her involvement in ministry, deciding the appropriate investigation process, decide the best way to immediately notify the alleged victim's parents about the allegations and the process, and also report to the authorities when required or proper. I'll take all of those steps. Now, if the perpetrator is not involved in FGM, ministry or activity, I'm going to take the same steps, except I don't need to decide how to confront the alleged perpetrator and remove him from ministry that involves minor or vulnerable adults. Now let's talk about the investigation. Remember, you don't need to conduct an investigation. The managing director of FGM will, or his designee, will conduct the investigation and assist with resolution of the case. The investigators will prepare a written report of their investigation to be used as the managing director of FGM determines. And the investigation that has been opened will be considered to be complete when the incident report has been filed with the managing director and the director of human resources of FGM, when the investigation has been completed and a decision has been reached, and, if applicable, the report has been made to a government agency or law enforcement agency. Now, let's talk a little bit, let's go to 6.5.3 and talk about your cooperation. All FGM are required to fully cooperate with any investigation as a condition of continued employment or association with FGM. In other words, anyone who refuses to cooperate fully with such an investigation is subject to having their relationship with Faith Global Missions terminated. Now, 6.6 talks about the outcome of the investigations and the resulting administrative actions by FGM. And that's going to be dependent on the findings. So, first of all, there may be a finding that child abuse was committed. In this case, FGM is going to take administrative action in accordance with this policy as follows. If FGM finds that sexual abuse has been committed, then the accused is going to be terminated without an opportunity to resign. The perpetrator will be classified as ineligible for future service. They'll not be eligible for any future service with FGM, nor will they be allowed to be present on any property owned or occupied by FGM in the future. In addition, the spouse of the accused will be asked to resign if the spouse works for FGM. If the spouse refuses to resign, then the spouse will be terminated as well from FGM. The FGM will also notify the sending church in order to provide appropriate accountability, and they will receive that report. And if the accused has already left FGM, if they've resigned or retired, FGM's records shall be changed to retroactively to accurately reflect the new information that they were terminated for sexual abuse. And there is special consideration for minors, and those cases will be evaluated on a case-by-case basis. And let's talk a little bit about references. Accurate employment references will be provided to other organizations. If FGM becomes aware that the accused is later employed by another organization, where the accused has access to children or vulnerable people, FGM will promptly disclose to such organization the reasons for the termination of the accused. In other words, FGM will not wait until they're asked. If we find that a person who has been terminated by our organization for sexual child abuse, we will notify their new employer. FGM is also going to make mental and spiritual health services available to the accused family, the victim, and others identified being in need of such services. In other words, we're not going to turn our back on anyone that's involved. We will provide biblical counseling for them, should they be willing to accept that. And a statement of findings will be filed in FGM's records. Now let's talk about non-sexual abuse. An action plan will be put in place by FGM to provide accountability, mentoring, and counseling. And we will attempt to salvage the person's relationship with FGM. But we also reserve the right to terminate the accused relationship at our discretion based on the circumstances of any particular case. Accurate employment references will be provided to other organizations considering employment of the accused. If we find the accused is later employed by an organization where they have access to children and vulnerable people, we will disclose to such an organization the reasons for termination of the accused. We will also provide the same follow-up care of counseling services for the accused family, the victim, and others, the accused family, the victim, and others identified as being in need of such services. There will also be a statement of findings filed in FGM's records. Now let's talk about findings that an abuse or neglect is not confirmed. When it's not confirmed, then we will attempt to help the accused restore his or her good name. We'll provide follow-up care through biblical counseling and other appropriate services to the accused and their family, the victim, and others identified as being in need of such services. And a statement of findings will be entered in our records. Now, third possibility is that there are inconclusive findings. If the victim's character has been sufficiently validated for us to conclude that the reported abuse did occur, but there's not sufficient corroborating information to conclude that the offender is as named in the victim's report, then we will provide follow-up care to those that are involved. We will put a statement of findings in the FGM's records. A fourth possible finding is that inappropriate behavior took place but not abuse. And so that is going to be a little bit different. We'll handle the matter as inappropriate behavior and that will be different for minors than it is for adults. And inappropriate behavior may result in termination, and it may result in, if it's child to child, it may result in counseling. It may result in an action plan will be put in place to resolve the causes and effects of the abuse and the inappropriate behavior, and a statement of findings will be filed in FGM's records. The cost of all investigations associated with such accusations will be borne and paid for by FGM. And FGM may adopt additional policies, guidelines, handbooks, protocols, and forms related to moral conduct, safety, child safety, or the safety of vulnerable people. If you have any questions about this policy, you may email your questions to missions@faithlafayette.org, and we will do our best to answer those questions.